Welcome to Giving an Answer, the show dedicated to defending the historic Christian faith. I am your host, Harold Felder. Today, the topic is going to be Jehovah Witnesses. I have a special guest with me, Larry Blythe, to discuss this topic. Larry Blythe, he has a Master's of Apologetics from Southern Evangelical Seminary. He also teaches at Southern Evangelical Bible Church. He's actively involved in ministering to Jehovah Witnesses, and he's also associate pastor at Southern Evangelical Church. So, Larry, first thing I want to ask you is, how did you get involved with the Jehovah Witnesses?
It was the typical knock at the door. I was actually in ministry in California. Had some Jehovah's Witnesses come to the door, and they knocked, and I lived in a parsonage, and they still came to the door. You know, big sign of, you know, Baptist church, and they came to the door, and I talked to them, and I knew something was wrong with their doctrine and what they were telling me, but I really couldn't pinpoint it. So I went to the bookstore after that, got some books, ended up calling a fella who was an ex-Jehovah's Witness, had been one for 18 years, and he mentored me, and it was like sick him to a dog after that, because I just really enjoyed talking with them, seeing some of them come out of the cult, and the rest is history.
Were you a new Christian then?
No, I was raised in a Christian home and became a Christian when I was about 10 years old. So I'd been a Christian all my life, but like too many Christians,
yeah,
I wasn't exposed, or I didn't know a lot about these other cults, and thought that, you know, everybody's, you know, on the same road.
And yeah,
found out differently about that.
As a matter of fact, I was listening to a preacher the other day on the radio, a famous preacher, and he was saying that he goes and visits some of his, you know, people in his congregation. They will have Jehovah Witnesses literature right there, and don't even know that it's Jehovah Witnesses literature.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, they're a book publishing company, basically.
Right.
So I mean, they have millions of books out there, and people can have them. In fact, children's books, they can have stuff like that and not know that it's from the Watchtower.
So, Larry, who are the Jehovah Witnesses, and what is the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society?
Well, first of all, let me say, when we talk about this, we're talking about their doctrine, what they believe. We don't think the people are bad people. We don't think that they're, you know, mean. We don't think of them badly. They're people that we love because Christ loved us, and we should love them enough to share the gospel with them. So when we talk about them, I often have people say, you know, well, they're nice people. And the same thing with Mormons, you know,
yeah,
they're really nice people. And they equate that with, they're nice, so they must not be wrong.
Right.
Well, you know, that just isn't true.
Right.
And so that's the very first thing, is that, yes, we believe that they're a cult, but we're talking about what they believe. We're not talking about the individual. I love the individual. I want them to come out of the cult, but they're so enmeshed in it that it has actually caused them to think differently about life. But most people know of Jehovah's Witnesses as those who come around to their doors. They're,
yeah,
the most zealous going door to door. That's because they have to. They have to go door to door. In fact, if you're one of Jehovah's Witnesses, which is how they refer to it, they say, I'm one of Jehovah's Witnesses. If you are, then that means you're going door to door. So if you're not going door to door and doing all this work up to 90 hours a month, then you're not really a Jehovah's Witness per se. You
know, I guess that's why they say witness. I guess that's where the whole witness thing fits in.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it's a complete action that has to be taken place. So you're not a very good Jehovah's Witness if you're not doing that. But it was a cult founded by Charles Taze Russell around 1879, which during that period of time, a lot of cults sprang up. And right now there's over 5 million worldwide of this group. And they started, of course, by questioning the scriptures, questioning the direction that Christianity was going, and found new information, God speaking to them
new
in a
revelation.
New way. Yeah, new revelation. It's a biggie for starting, because you've got to discredit what's going on at the time, and that's exactly what they did. They meet in kingdom halls, and they're called kingdom halls, and they have no windows.
Why?
People always ask that, why no windows? There's two answers, in my opinion, and one is just my spiritual opinion, I guess, and that is that they want to keep the darkness inside.
Mm.
The darkness, you know, being a metaphor, but
right,
you know, the darkness of Satan's kingdom. But they don't realize that. What they say is they don't want intruders looking in. They don't want people being curious. And it's kind of a lame answer, but that's what they say. But you look, you won't find any kingdom halls that have windows. Some of them buy old buildings and they actually cover the windows. So you go by and you go, well, that kingdom hall has windows. But if you go up and look, they're blocked on the inside. Basically, the Jehovah's Witness goes around door to door, 30, 60 hours, 90 hours a month, depending on what level of commitment they are. They go around.
What do you mean, what level of commitment they are?
Well, there's a number of levels of commitment. If a Jehovah's Witness doesn't work, doesn't have a full-time job, they could actually be, and they have names for each of these, but that's not as important. But if you're the highest level commitment, you do 90 hours a month, that's 3 hours a day. You can do mid-range 60 hours or 30 hours. And that can include even on the job. In fact, you go downtown here and you'll see people standing in the corner and they'll be holding their magazines. And they will count that as their time. And they actually log the time and they have to give it to the organization to show how many hours they're putting in. Now, they'll play that down and say, oh, no, we don't. But, of course, those who've come out, they give us all of the little cards they have to fill out. And what they do is they'll just say, well, it's a joy for us to report that.
Now, why does the organization need to keep track of their time?
At the end of every year, they produce a book, because they're a book publishing company, Brooklyn, New York, and other places where they publish. In fact, they've recently moved their publishing to another state, but most of it was in Brooklyn. At the end of the year, they put out a yearbook, and it's a small book. It's similar to a size like this. And they put out, and it says, the Yearbook of Jehovah's Witnesses. And they have one for every year that they have been in existence from, I'm not sure, but probably the 30s or 40s. I'm not sure on that point. But what that does is that reports their kingdom activities worldwide. And it's for a rah-rah, you know? I mean, it's to rally them together and say, look what we've done. And we, you know, last year we put out, you know, several million books all worldwide. And, 400,000 were baptized. And so it becomes a yearbook. So they keep close track. And I didn't bring it with me tonight, but you can get a yearbook and find out. That's how we know there's 5 million worldwide right now, over 5 million. Okay. Because it says, and you can see the trend too, where they get lower and sometimes they get higher. Like in 1975, they got lower because they had a failed prophecy and a lot of people left.
Right.
So it goes up and down, but that's why they do that.
Okay.
So, but when they come to your door, they're trying to offer a free Bible study, which kind of makes me laugh sometimes, you know, as opposed to a charged Bible study.
Yeah.
For $10, we'll come to your house.
Right.
They do a free Bible study, and it's actually not a Bible study at all. What you end up doing is it's a book and a magazine study. And whereas we might look at the scriptures by reading them like this, and then we'll have other material as we read the scriptures, they have their magazines and their publications, and they read the Bible like this. Their magazine interprets the Bible for them. So they see the Bible through the eyes of their magazine.
Now, can't they just do Bible study on their own without the magazine?
They can't. The organization, and I ask them this all the time because it's a very important question, their organization says you cannot properly understand the Bible without God's visible organization in mind. Hmm. So you and I, and they hate this question, but I'll often ask them, can I read the Bible alone and come to a knowledge of eternal life apart from you or the organization? And they always sweat at that point, and they go, and they squirm because they know the answer is no, but they don't want to say no. So they say no with about 10 minutes of commentary. And so then it gets back to the bottom line. Can I read the Bible alone and be saved without the organization, without you or anybody? No, you cannot. The organization, because they teach, in fact, that's one of their other distinctives, they teach that in order to properly understand the Bible, you have to have an organization always. You have to have God's visible organization directing how to interpret these things. And that's what they do. But they try to play that down and make people believe, make Jehovah's Witnesses believe that they're doing that themselves, that they're actually interpreting the scriptures.
Right, right.
Because when they sit in your home, they open up their New World Translation and they go through it and they read it. But of course, they read things out of context. And when they get in trouble and they don't know, the first thing they do is they go to their book called Reasoning from the Scriptures. And this little brown book is their apologetic book. And when they come upon a Christian who asks them a really tough question, mm-hmm. they abandon their Bible and they go to this and they have to start looking for the answer here. So they are not connected to the scriptures. They're connected to what the Watchtower organization says about the scriptures.
Interesting.
But, you know, Russell, who is the founder, Charles Taze Russell, started the organization off with that assumption that you can't understand these things, first of all, without me. It was him, first of all. Later, it became the organization that you need to interpret these things. But it first started off, and this is a point which they hate, is that the organization started off with Charles Russell was that organization. Now they teach that that's wrong, that's sinful. It has to be an organization, not one person.
Right, I see your point.
But for years they taught it was just one person.
Right.
And he directed the organization. He directed people. He interpreted scriptures. And they've since abandoned that, and they try to show that that was never the case. But they've printed so much stuff, you can show them that that was the case.
I guess especially when he dies, because once he dies, then what happened to the guy who founded the organization? Well, then you have to say, well, no, it wasn't the guy. It was the organization.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's what they do. And when he died, in fact, he predicted that in 1874 that Christ returned invisibly to the world, or was supposed to come visibly, but when he didn't come visibly, they said, well, it was invisibly, 1874. Well, that came and went. So
when did he make this prediction?
I'm not sure exactly when he made it, because there were a lot of prophecies.
Right.
And 1874 was supposed to be the biggie, and that's what propelled them into starting, which is why the start date is actually seen as 1879. Because it started off with failure, strangely enough. But some of the real early history is really entangled, and you can't nail down as much as you'd like to, but they've printed so much you can get pretty accurate. And because there were other prophecies too, 1879 and then 1912, 1914, these are all prophecies. 1914 was the biggie. Armageddon was supposed to come and wipe out all non-Jehovah's Witnesses, and the earth would then go into a period of, you know, millennial reign, God's kingdom. Well, as we know, that came and went.
What was this based on? What was this prophecy based on? What information did they have to lead them to believe that the world was going to end then?
That's a very good question. I think it was based upon Satan actually directing them to confuse people, because what they did, and the literal way, the literal answer to your question, is they took a number of scriptures and they tried to come up with a timeline and go back in history all the way back to when God said a number of things in Daniel and in Revelation, and they tried to come up with a timeline that showed that God's kingdom would actually, if they put all the numbers together, would end in 1914. And of course their record was wrong, the way they figured was wrong, and of course going through Bible history is incorrect, because we don't have all of the pieces, there's missing pieces. Plus the prophecies they were interpreting were incorrect, they didn't mean what they said they meant, which is the problem with having one person direct an organization,
right.
And interpreting the scriptures. So 1914 came and went, and it wasn't too long after that Charles Taze Russell died, because he was kind of disappointed.
Now, it would seem to me that 1914 comes and goes. Why are there still Jehovah's Witnesses in 1915?
Yes, that's the question. Well, just like any deceptive organization, they can reorganize and they can cover back over what they said and say, well, we didn't quite get it correct, so don't fault me. You know, we didn't quite get it correct. What we missed is that Christ did come in 1914. And they'll sit there and they'll proudly say, well, Harold, what happened in 1914? And you go, I don't know. And they'll go, World War I. And you'll go,
okay.
And you'll say, yeah. Well, see, And that's what they actually, you know, point to that as, see, he did come. However, you didn't see it because it was invisible. So he returned invisibly in 1914, and we're still waiting for Armageddon. And in fact, all throughout their literature, they say that that time is just around the corner. And from 1914 till 2005, they've been saying that it's just around the corner. So we figure that corner is actually a round circular corner. Because it's always just around the corner.
Right.
And even to this day, it's just around the corner. And it hasn't happened. In fact, in 1925, they predicted that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob would return to the planet, to the earth, and would actually live in San Diego in a mansion they built called Beth Sarim. And that mansion was to house some of the old, you know, our old forefathers biblically.
Patriarchs and stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
And, of course, that came and went as well. And the same question that you asked, why are there still Jehovah's Witnesses? Because they say, look, and this is a very clever trick that they do. Some people got a little zealous, and we didn't quite understand what God was saying there. Here's actually what he meant. And people take that. You know, they say, oh, okay. Now, they do lose people every time they do that. So after 1975, they really tried to be more careful in making those predictions. Even in 1975, they were real careful, and they said that we expect God to return in 1975.
So yeah, what happened in 1975? What's the deal with that? I mean, there was another time that God was Jesus was supposed to come back, or?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, that was a time that Jesus would return. And they didn't want to say that he returned invisibly then, because they already used that for 1914.
Right.
But they said, look, we didn't say he was literally going to return. It just, everything pointed to that. Well, the problem is they had people selling their homes.
Yeah.
During the 70s, Jehovah's Witnesses, it was very well known and very popular to not go to school for the Jehovah's Witness, I mean, to not go to school, not to get education, not to get that big job you want, but to get a job just to hold you over because 1975 was coming. Now, what the Watchtower Organization did is they printed those stories in all of their magazines saying, you know, brothers and sisters all over the world are preparing and not going to school so they can prepare for the time of the Lord. And then afterwards they said, hey, look, you guys got too zealous about that. But they propagated it
right.
by printing it. And
right.
so when you point them to that, they say, well, they didn't really mean that.
Right.
So they argue continually in circles, just like it is just around the corner, Armageddon. So they argue in circles as well.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Interesting. Now, you started off by calling them a cult.
Right.
So what is a cult, and why do you consider them a cult?
It is a definition that I will give you, but you can broaden this definition. So you have to look and determine a group to see at what point you would consider them a cult. But basically, we would consider a cult to be a group of people polarized around someone's interpretation of the Bible and is characterized by major deviations from Orthodox Christianity relative to the cardinal doctrines of the Christian faith, particularly the fact that God became man in Jesus Christ. Now, although that is one definition, you can broaden it much more. So you'd have to look at groups and say, to what extent do they deny Orthodox doctrines? Because that's the nutshell. Any group that denies one or more essential doctrines of the Christian
right.
faith. But you still have to make a determination. So it may come down to people's opinions on if this group is or this group isn't. But it's kind of like the argument from the beard. We do know when they are a cult. And with Jehovah's Witnesses, we do. They don't deny just one.
Explain the argument of the beard for those who don't know it.
The argument of the beard says that I don't know when this is actually a beard.
Right.
Is it when I just have one day's, you know, growth or 2 days growth? Well, I don't know. But that doesn't mean I can't identify when it's not a beard. When I'm clean shaven, that's not a beard. This is a beard when it is, it's on here now.
Right.
And it's the same with Jehovah's Witnesses and other groups. We may not determine exactly where they become a cult, and that will be left to opinion, but we do know when they are a cult and when they're not a cult. And Jehovah's Witnesses, the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society, is definitely a cult because of all of the major biblical doctrines they deny, as well as many other things.
What are some of the doctrines that they have, that we have issues with as Christians?
We can poke our finger at just about any doctrine.
What about Jesus? Who's Jesus to the Jehovah's Witness?
For the Jehovah's Witness, Jesus is a created being. We believe that he's a son of God. He always existed, and he's God in the flesh as Christians.
Right.
The Jehovah's Witnesses are taught that Jesus pre-existed as Michael the Archangel. And when he came into the world, he came in as Jesus. And he lived and died, of course. And when he was resurrected, his body was dissolved into gases, or Jehovah just disposed of his body somehow. They're not sure at that point. But the man Jesus, the bodily Jesus, did not raise from the dead. He was raised as a spirit creature, and now he's back in heaven as Michael the Archangel. And they have four verses they try to prove that and show that Michael the Archangel is Jesus. They're one and the same. So just like any other group that we would consider a cult, they dethrone Jesus and they take him off of the throne of deity. And just, you know, he was a great man. He was a god, which is kind of odd. And he was not God in the flesh.
Okay, so there's no Trinity. Then is there a resurrection? Because that's one of the blessed hopes of a Christian, is the resurrection after Jesus himself. He was the first resurrected person. So how do they deal with the resurrection? Is there a resurrection in the Jehovah's Witnesses theology?
There is not the way you and I define it. In fact, if we were to define it correctly for them, we would say a recreation, not a resurrection. Because they believe when you die, you cease to exist. There's no more you. You're completely gone. However, they're taught that Jehovah retains a memory of your life. And they actually use a phonograph record as an example. That as Harold Felder is living his life, Jehovah is keeping a track of everything and keeping a recording of your life. Then when you die, you cease to exist. There's no more Harold Felder. That's completely gone. There's no soul sleep. It's soul annihilation. You're completely gone. There's no soul that comes after death. So when God sets up his kingdom, what happens is God makes a brand new body, a brand new person that looked like Harold Felder. And he takes that phonograph record, takes a copy of your life pattern, and puts it into this new body.
Hmm.
So it's not you, because they say, well, it's the same thing. It's his life pattern. But it's not you, because you remember, you ceased to exist.
Right.
You didn't come back to life. What was put back into this body Jehovah made was a third generation copy or memory of Harold Felder's life. So there is no resurrection. And if you are resurrected in their terms, the way they call it, the recreation, if you then, when you're resurrected during this millennial time, if you do not follow Jehovah during that time period, then Jehovah will annihilate you again, and you'll be completely gone forever.
Wow.
Yeah, because there's no hell, so you cease to exist. So there's no ultimate responsibility. In fact, before when they've told me this at the door or in my home, I'll say, well, boy, sign me up, because I don't have to worry about my sin.
Right.
I don't have to worry about these things. I'm going to go out and live the way I want, because I'll be annihilated. Right. I won't have a memory of anything. I'll be gone. I won't suffer for my sin.
Right. The preceding show has been sponsored by Giving an Answer. If you would like to hear this broadcast in its entirety, you can order a CD of today's show or a DVD of the studio recording. For more information, call 704-307-4155. You can also contact us via mail at Giving an Answer, P.O. Box 1972, Matthews, North Carolina, 28106. Or on the web at givinganswer.org. That phone number again is 704-307-4155. And remember, this is listener-supported radio.